The United Kingdom is currently going through one of the greatest crises in its entire history, and it's so severe it's unclear whether or not the country will end up surviving in its current form at all. The rate of inflation in Britain is currently the highest it's been in more than 40 years. The economy is in the midst of a recession that is only likely to get worse through 2023, while the UK government shuffled through three different prime ministers in a matter of only 51 days. And perhaps worst of all from the perspective of Westminster, Scotland continues to remain restless. A threat that could not only end up dissolving the entire country after more than three centuries of unity, but could also undermine NATO's entire strategy against the Russians in the event of a war. You see, back in 2014, the UK government granted Scotland the right to hold a referendum on independence for the first time in the country's history, and it only narrowly failed. 45% of Scottish voters back then voted to leave and become an independent country, while 55% voted to remain within the UK. But of course, that referendum was held back when the UK was still in the European Union, before the Brexit vote that came 2 years later in 2016. During that UK-wide referendum on whether or not the whole country should remain in the European Union, 62% of the Scottish vote went towards remaining, making up a majority in every single voting area in the country. But England and Wales voted slightly more in favor of leaving, with the English vote being split roughly 53% leave and 47% remain. And because England's population is five times larger than Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland combined, that was enough to edge the entire UK-wide vote just slightly more in favor of leaving, split roughly 52% leave to 48% remain. The entire United Kingdom was now leaving the European Union, and it was taking Scotland along with it, despite the clear majority in Scotland wishing to remain. It then became clear that one way for Scotland to remain in the EU would be if they left the UK, and then reapplied to join the EU as an independent country. And so the case for another referendum on independence immediately began to gain more steam. Then in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic in October of 2020, polling in Scotland began showing for the very first time a narrow majority of Scots were then in favor of independence, with 52% in favor to 39% against and 8% undecided. And then during the 2021 parliamentary elections, pro-independence parties in Scotland managed to increase their majority in the Scottish Parliament. That encouraged Scotland's First Minister in June of 2022 to then propose a second referendum on independence that was tentatively dated for the 19th of October 2023, 9 years after the first referendum had been held. But then just a few weeks ago, the UK Supreme Court unanimously ruled that Scotland has no right to host another independence referendum on its own without the approval of the UK government in Westminster. And by that, they really mean without the approval of England, the country that so demographically dominates the UK. The second Scottish independence referendum has thus been put on hold now indefinitely. And a lot of the reason why is because the specter of an independent Scotland is probably the single greatest nightmare that terrifies not only the government in Westminster, but also the strategic planners at the NATO headquarters in Brussels. Because if Scotland ever does end up leaving the UK, it won't just mean a potential end of the United Kingdom and a disunited Britain. It will also mean that Russia's military position in the Arctic and the North Atlantic will be greatly strengthened, and the Kremlin will most likely have a better ability to threaten and disrupt the NATO alliance in ways that it has never been capable of doing before. Here's what I mean. The first thing we need to consider is what happens to the rest of the United Kingdom if Scotland leaves the country. And the first major consequence will be what would happen to all of the UK's oil and gas reserves located in the North Sea. Beginning back in 1970, large commercial-grade offshore oil and gas reserves began to be discovered within the British Maritime Exclusive Economic Zone of the North Sea. They would eventually reveal that the UK controlled the 31st largest reserves of oil in the world, an amount that is roughly on a par with the Republic of the Congo, one of the members of OPEC. Understandably, these North Sea reserves quickly became a central foundation for the modern British and Scottish economies. By the 1980s, British oil and gas revenues from the North Sea had hit their highest levels when adjusted for inflation, around £35 billion a year in today's valuation. And over time, the industry would pay hundreds of billions of pounds in taxes to the British government and support hundreds of thousands of UK jobs. And even though production, revenues, and taxes have all steadily declined over the decades since the 80s, as the fields have become more and more depleted, British domestic oil and gas production was still sufficient enough to meet more than half of the UK's entire demand as recently as 2016. And as a result, the UK has been capable of maintaining a strong sense of energy independence now for decades. and has been less reliant on foreign imports of oil and gas than other European countries like Germany. And that has given the British government a much higher degree of flexibility in its foreign policy. As an example, before the Russians invaded Ukraine, the UK was only importing 4% of its gas and 9% of its oil from Moscow. Compared to Germany's Russian-supplied imports of more than half of their gas and 40% of their oil. Thus, it was a far easier decision for the UK to ban all of their Russian fossil fuel imports than it was for Germany. They could always make up some of that difference by ramping up production in their own fields in the North Sea. But if Scotland ever ends up leaving the country, it'll take the entire domestic British oil industry along with it. This is because, as an independent country, Scotland would be entitled to its own Maritime Exclusive Economic Zone, or EEZ, just like every other country, and it would most likely end up looking something like this. All of the maritime resources within this zone would then belong to Scotland. And remember that the UK's offshore oil and gas reserves in the North Sea are located like this. Notice that pretty much all of the oil reserves would be within the Scottish EEZ. This means that in an instant, 95% of the UK's current oil reserves would flip over to being Scottish oil reserves. And many interesting implications would flow from this. Scotland could then choose to do whatever they want with the oil, including potentially nationalizing the industry and kicking out the big major companies that are currently operating there like BP. Or they could potentially even refuse to allow any extraction at all, and let the oil sit there in the ground for environmental reasons while the country transitions towards a renewable future. Whichever the scenario, Scotland would ultimately be in charge of what is today the entire UK's domestic oil supply, and they'd be capable of deciding how much or how little of it goes to whatever remains of the UK. If it ends up being very little, then whatever remains of the UK suddenly loses a lot of its former energy independence. And so they'll have to go searching around the world for additional oil suppliers to meet their demand. And worse still, the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the reluctance of OPEC members to raise production resulted in the global price of oil skyrocketing in 2022, which is resulting in a temporary boost in the profits to the UK oil industry, and potentially encouraging Scottish independence even further. Since most of the oil industry takes place in Scottish waters, the higher oil prices are temporarily improving Scotland's financial position relative to the UK as a whole. Scottish nationalists are aware that this situation won't last forever, as the limited oil reserves continue to run out and global prices eventually return back to normal. So right now, Scotland is the strongest they are ever likely to appear in any hypothetical negotiations for independence. Hence, partially why the Scottish First Minister was insisting on an independence referendum to be held in October of 2023. But were Scotland to successfully leave the country, it likely wouldn't be the end of the United Kingdom's disillusion. For the first time in the UK's modern history, the 2021 census revealed that Catholics outnumber Protestants in Northern Ireland by a rate of 42% to 37% of the population. And while this doesn't suggest that all Catholics support union with Ireland, nor all Protestants support staying in the UK, it is still nonetheless a notable demographic development. Exactly a century previously, in 1921, when Ireland was partitioned between the independent Republic of Ireland and the still UK-ruled Northern Ireland, the more UK loyalist Protestants outnumbered the more Irish Republican Catholics by a ratio of 2-1. And Westminster's demographic control over Belfast looked more secure than it does today. And then, as in Scotland, came the Brexit vote of 2016. And just as in Scotland, the Northern Irish also voted more heavily to remain in the European Union, with roughly 56% voting remain and only 44% voting leave. And immediately after the results became clear that the whole UK, including Northern Ireland, would be leaving the European Union, the Irish Republican Party next door in the Republic of Ireland, the most heavily advocates for Irish unification, Sinn Féin, called for a referendum on a united Ireland to be held at once. As with Scotland, one potential way for Northern Ireland to rejoin the European Union would be to leave the UK and join the Republic of Ireland, which is still an EU member state. And while general support for this within Northern Ireland is difficult to gauge, were Scotland to leave the UK, it would almost certainly have an effect on Northern Ireland's desire to leave as well. In the event that both of them did leave, the United Kingdom would essentially dissolve into just the Kingdom of England and Wales, marking what would probably be the end of the long, century-long process of the British Empire's collapse that began after the end of the First World War. If they left, Scotland and Northern Ireland would almost certainly apply to and rejoin the European Union. But what about the NATO military alliance? Ireland has always maintained an official policy of military neutrality throughout its entire history since independence, and has never once applied to join NATO, even after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. If Northern Ireland left the UK and joined with the Republic of Ireland, then that territory would no longer be a part of the NATO alliance. And if Scotland leaves the UK, then they would also suddenly no longer be a part of NATO either. That would leave them with two choices. Either reapply to NATO and go through what would likely become a years-long bureaucratic process to become approved individually by every single other existing member of NATO, or pursue a similar policy of military neutrality as Ireland and simply decline to reapply and stay out of it. Either of these choices would be a major pain both for NATO and whatever remains of the British military for these very critical reasons. The first thing to consider are the British military bases in the north of Scotland. The RAF base at Lossiemouth and the Army base at Lukers. An independent Scotland would have every right to insist on the British military vacating from both of them, and the consequences for NATO would be dire. Lossiemouth is one of the largest air bases operated by the RAF, and is one of the two air bases that currently contributes to the UK's continuous airspace protection alongside the RAF base at Coningsby, further to the south in Lincolnshire. Planes operating out of these two air bases maintain the continuous defense of UK airspace at all times. And Lossiemouth is arguably the more important one, because it is the one more nearby to where Russian jets most frequently make their probing flybys. After the Russians invaded Ukraine for the first time and annexed Crimea in 2014, and Western nations began applying financial sanctions against their government, Russian jets, including nuclear-capable bombers, have made frequent flybys of the UK's airspace by flying around the north of the country, and the RAF most often intercepts them by scrambling fighters out of Lossiemouth. But this ability will be lost to whatever remains of the RAF were Scotland to leave, and their ability to intercept Russian aircraft and potentially even missiles coming in from the north will be severely depleted. But that's not even the worst thing that would potentially happen for NATO. The worst nightmare for NATO is what would happen to the submarine bases and facilities here at Faslane and Coalport on the west coast of Scotland, arguably the most strategically located naval facility in the entire NATO alliance. Faslane is presently the home base of the entirety of the British nuclear submarine fleet and the UK's whole nuclear deterrent. It was selected for this purpose back during the Cold War because of its excellent geographic location, which is the best place in the entire UK to build a submarine base at. The area around Faslane is remote and sparsely populated, far removed from any prying eyes. The waters around it are well protected and easily defensible, while the Gairloch and Firth of Clyde nearby are deep and easily navigable bodies of water that lead directly out to either the Irish Sea and the English Channel in the south, or up to the all-important GIUK gap in the north between Scotland, Iceland, and Greenland. The GIUK gap is probably the most important body of water for submarines to consider in the entire world, because it is the only possible gateway that Russian and formerly Soviet subs could take from their northern bases in the Arctic towards the Atlantic Ocean. Even today, the crown jewel of the Russian Navy is their northern fleet based up near Murmansk in the Kola Peninsula. Russia possesses 11 submarines in total that are capable of firing long-range nuclear weapons in the event of an all-out nuclear war. And 8 of those subs are stationed with the Northern Fleet near Murmansk. The only way for them to travel into the Northern Atlantic and threaten the United States and Canada is by traveling anywhere through the GIUK gap, which is presently controlled on all of its sides entirely by NATO allies, with a major submarine base at Faslane located right nearby for rapid and stealthy access, where all 4 of the UK's nuclear-armed submarines are presently headquartered. One of these 4 nuclear-armed submarines is always out on patrol in an undisclosed location at all times. And this is how the UK manages to maintain a 24-hour, 365-day-a-year nuclear deterrent. If you attack the UK with nukes, you never know where that other sub is that can fire back at you in retaliation. But of course, this entire strategy immediately falls apart the moment Scotland leaves the UK and NATO and doesn't decide to rejoin. This is even further complicated by the Scottish government's antagonistic position towards nuclear weapons. Leading up to the 2014 Scottish independence referendum, the Scottish National Party vowed that it would force the British submarines and nuclear weapons out of Faslane in the country were independence to be achieved. That would mean the UK would suddenly lose its continually at sea nuclear deterrent. And there were few other places anywhere else in the UK for those subs and nukes to go in the event that they are forced to leave. It would end up costing the UK billions of pounds and years worth of effort to recreate another submarine base of the same kind of caliber somewhere else in England or Wales. And the geographic location would never be as good as it is at Faslane. For many years until the new base could be constructed, the entire British submarine fleet and nuclear deterrent would almost certainly have to be rebased outside of the country, in the facilities of another NATO ally with nuclear submarine capabilities, of which there are only two. Across the Channel in France, or across the Atlantic in the United States. Neither of which are particularly close to the GI-UK gap, and both of which would add significant logistical issues to the UK's nuclear deterrent. As a great power with global interests and commitments, the UK arguably needs a continuous nuclear deterrent because global threats can suddenly develop and change very rapidly. In 2021, many would have probably argued that the UK no longer needed nuclear weapons to defend itself with, as there were simply no existential threats to the country. But then a year later, in September of 2022, in the midst of the conflict in Ukraine, a former advisor to Vladimir Putin named Sergei Markov publicly said during a televised interview that Russian nuclear missiles could be aimed at London if the UK continues to be, according to him, aggressive towards Moscow. Geopolitical and existential threats can appear and change rapidly. It's important to remember that in 1932, Germany was crippled financially and its military was hobbled by the Treaty of Versailles, and it didn't appear as any kind of threat to the British. But then, just 8 years later, the Germans were occupying Paris and they were bombing London every single night during the Blitz. The Royal Navy submarines and nuclear deterrent cannot ever afford to take the chance of being away from the country for years at a time, while threats like these can suddenly materialize. The Royal Navy's facilities at Faslane and Coalport are therefore considered almost irreplaceable to both the defense of the UK and NATO's defense of the GI-UK gap in the North Atlantic. And as such, there have been suggestions that during the negotiations of an independent Scotland, the UK could offer to lease the facilities from Scotland in order to continue using them. But this is unlikely to happen because, again, the Scottish government simply wants the nuclear weapons and the subs out of the country. And lease payments from the UK to continue storing their nuclear weapons there are unlikely to convince them otherwise. And that means that the most likely scenario if Scotland achieves independence is that the UK and NATO will lose their most strategically valuable submarine base. British and NATO subs will no longer be capable of rapidly accessing the GI-UK gap in the event of an emergency. And since Scotland and a potential United Ireland will both not likely be members of NATO, the entire southern flank of the GI-UK gap will fall under the fog of war to NATO intelligence, granting the Russian nuclear submarine fleet based in Kola an unprecedented ability to infiltrate through the gap and into the North Atlantic, where they can cause all kinds of chaos and damage to the West. It isn't just the threat of them being able to fire nuclear missiles at NATO targets from anywhere in the remote vastness of the Atlantic. The bigger risk is potentially the threat of Russian maritime sabotage to the dozens of critical undersea internet cables that span the Atlantic between North America and Europe. These are the cables that literally form the backbone of the global economy. They carry more than 95% of international data and more than $10 trillion worth of financial transfers every single day. The cables across the Atlantic are the most vital links between the two halves of the NATO alliance. And they are especially critical to the Europeans because a majority of European data is stored within data centers across the United States that then have to travel through these cables back to Europe. Without these cables, the internet as you know it and the connectivity that you're used to between the continents would simply not exist. And you'd have to just rely on satellites instead, which are significantly slower, less reliable, and more expensive to maintain. But the cables are also critical for the military and diplomatic institutions as well, as most military orders between the continents flow through these cables too. In 2008, a break in the undersea cables between Italy and Egypt directly caused military orders being sent to US forces in Iraq to drop. And American drone flights over Iraq immediately decreased from hundreds a day down to dozens. In the opening shots of a potential conflict, these cables can be sabotaged to inflict economic mayhem and disrupt NATO's military communications, while Russian troops attempt to quickly pour across the borders into the Baltic states to occupy countries like Estonia, Latvia, or Lithuania before a NATO response can be quickly or effectively made. The United States now has more than 100,000 troops deployed to Europe, largely to dissuade the Russians from ever trying to do that. But how do you think the majority of those troops receive their orders from the Pentagon? It's through those transatlantic cables, and the cables are vulnerable. Back in January of 2022, just a bit over a month before the Russians invaded Ukraine, one of the undersea fiber optic cables between the Norwegian mainland and the Svalbard archipelago was mysteriously ripped away. Svalbard happens to be home to the largest satellite ground station in the world, called Svalsat, which is used by Western space agencies to collect signals from satellites orbiting over the Arctic, where most of Russia's important submarine and nuclear weapons facilities happen to be located. Those signals are then sent from the station through the undersea cables back to the Norwegian and European mainland. But after the cable was destroyed, the Norwegians had to begin relying on a slower backup link to continue transmitting the data. And then nearly a year before that, in April of 2021, another cable that was used by Norway to monitor activity on the Arctic Ocean seafloor, where potential Russian saboteurs and submarines would be active, was also mysteriously destroyed. These events could have each been accidents, or they could have also been intentional sabotage. The ocean is a very big place, and it's difficult to see everything that's going on beneath it. In June of 2022, a mysterious culprit planted bombs down on the bottom of the Baltic Sea that blew up sections of the Nord Stream pipeline that deliver natural gas between Russia and Germany. And just a few weeks after the undersea cable between Svalbard and Norway was somehow destroyed, the Russian Navy carried out an exercise within international waters to the southwest of neutral Ireland. And the exercise's location happened to also be placed directly over the location of many of Europe's most critical undersea cables, including the highest capacity undersea cable in the world, called Amity, a 250 million euro cable that was only completed in 2022 that can carry 368 terabits a second of data between the continents. The threat that the Russian Navy was making by this exercise was very clear. In the event of a conflict with NATO over Ukraine, the undersea internet cables across the North Atlantic would become a target of the submarine fleet based in Murmansk. And the only way those submarines can enter the North Atlantic is through the GIUK gap. And if Scotland leaves the United Kingdom and NATO, then the Russian submarine fleet's ability to pass through the gap and threaten the cables will be dramatically increased. And that is why Scotland leaving the UK will most likely be a geopolitical headache for both the UK and NATO that they would each rather avoid, and why the UK will try to do whatever it takes to prevent Scotland from ever actually leaving in the first place. Now, sifting through all the news to create these kinds of videos about macro current events is pretty difficult. There are tons of different media outlets out there with all kinds of different biases that can make finding the nuanced truth about what's actually going on out in the world difficult to figure out. Which is exactly why a good news aggregator app like today's sponsor, Ground News, is so helpful. I literally use Ground News every day to help keep myself up to date on everything going on in the world, and it's because they'll provide you with a feed of headlines curated from more than 50,000 different outlets from all across the world, but with all the content sorted and categorized in various ways that make it easier to see through the spin and biases so you can figure out what's actually going on. This includes really useful abilities, like being able to watch how international stories are being covered across the globe using their interactive map, or being able to quickly swipe through the different headlines that different outlets are publishing on the same story, as well as an ability to observe which outlets are choosing to ignore or underreport certain stories that are being widely reported elsewhere. So if you're looking for a better way to stay informed about current events happening all around the world, make sure to check out Ground News by visiting the link down in the description below at ground.news/reallifelore, or by clicking the button that's here on your screen now. It's a great way to help support what my team does here at Real Life Lore, and you can consider subscribing to Ground News as well in order to support independent media outsiders working to make the news a little more transparent. And as always, thank you for watching.